Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to Screen Geeks Radio. This is Dave.
And this is Barry.
Josh has real life to deal with, which is why he'll be on pretty soon here. We're working on getting him set up online and all that stuff so he can remote in.
I think he's currently at camping out in front of the theater, ready for U2, the 3D IMAX experience. I think that's why he's not here this week.
He's hoping for a cameo by Mary Elizabeth Winstead, right?
In a perfect world, in Josh's perfect world, that would indeed be the case.
There we go. Okay. Yeah. Wow. Okay. I don't know. All right, let's go ahead and talk about what came out this week, because that's going to be, like, I'm guessing, almost the primary portion of our discussion today.
Yeah, well, let's start from the bottom up.
It's all about 27 Dresses.
That's right. It's all about Katherine Heigl. You had Woody Allen's new thriller with Colin Farrell and Ewan McGregor, Cassandra's Dream, and even more limited release, Teeth. The ironically titled Mad Money, because it didn't make any money over the weekend, with Diane Keaton, Katie Holmes, and Queen Latifah, Katherine Heigl and James Marsden in the romantic comedy 27 Dresses, and a literal monster movie, which is currently slaughtering all the competition at the box office, making the kind of movie you normally see during the summertime, the J.J. Abraham produced Cloverfield.
Yes, directed by Matt Reeves.
We got to give Matt Reeves some credit, because I swear it's the same thing like with Superbad. Everybody thought that Judd Apatow directed it, but no, it was actually, you know, there actually was a director there. So yeah, we got to give Matt Reeves some credit for Cloverfield.
Although here's the interesting thing. I was expecting it to have really strong characters and really crappy action, because he was known for directing stuff like Felicity, and I forget, there's another show.
He directed The Pallbearer with David Schwimmer, which wasn't very good.
Well, but I mean, as far as his TV credits, he's done some stuff that has good character development, that's known for its character development.
Did he do Lost as well, Matt Reeves?
No.
Okay.
The only action-related thing he had is he wrote Under Siege 2.
He wrote that?
Yes.
He's
so, yeah, so I was
also
like,
with Katherine Heigl, I might add.
Wow. Okay, there you go. Speaking of her, weren't you and Josh talking about how she was like really disappointed that she was in Knocked Up after all or something?
Apparently, she gave an unfortunate soundbite. Apparently, it was at some award show where she said, yeah, she felt the film was actually sexist and kind of childish. And she had never voiced that to Judd Apatow or Seth Rogen before, so they took that in defense, which is completely understandable. Yeah. 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 So
let's get back to Cloverfield. We have your review up on the site. I enjoyed it for the monster movie portion. I like to call it Cloverfield. The monster movie was amazing.
Yeah,
I loved it. Cloverfield, the character portions, blew chunks.
Sure.
That was like the reason I gave it a 7.5. It was like between a 6 and a 7, and I'll get to why it jumped up later. But like when you spend the first 20-25 minutes trying to set up these characters, and I couldn't care less and couldn't wait for them to start dying off, or at least hoping they'd die off, that's not a good sign, because the movie's only 84 minutes. You're talking a quarter of the running time at least is wasted.
Yes, very, very trendy characters, you know, very, that would not have been out of place on The Hills or The O.C. or Sex and the City. And I found them all to be so superficial and full of themselves and shallow and uninteresting, honestly.
Even Hud was kind of annoying. He had like two good lines, but
you know,
like,
yeah, I mean, he definitely provided the comic relief, but you know, I didn't think he was an especially appealing character. And I mean, all the party scenes, I mean, thank God a monster showed up.
Painful.
Yeah.
And it's only 84 minutes.
And I got to say, it does not, it feels much longer. And I think they certainly take advantage of the time. And I think the movie is paced well enough. But honestly, when the film does come to DVD, I'll be skipping some scenes and going straight to the cool stuff.
Like the first 20 minutes, yeah.
Yes, I don't need to see any of that crap again, no.
I
and you know, no offense to the actors. I just didn't think the acting was especially great. And, you know, they didn't,
and I don't know if that's the writing, the directing,
exactly,
or the acting.
Yeah, because, I mean, you know, in all fairness to them, the script really didn't give them a lot to work with in that department. But, I mean, the movie is a big stunt. It's a big cinematic stunt. And I think in that way, it really does work.
It's a giant gimmick, and I think that gimmick got pulled off extremely well. Because it very well could have been very derivative of the Blair Witch type stuff and whatever. The ending you can see coming a mile away if you think about it at the beginning of the film.
Mm-hmm.
I won't say anything, but in the title cards, it pretty much gives it away.
Sure.
But, you know, I was still glad that it happened the way they did it. I like the way they ended the movie. I like the monster. I couldn't tell you what it looks like to save my life, to like really describe it, but I thought it was pretty well done.
Yeah.
And the horror, the terror aspects, oh my gosh.
I like the shaky
cam. The subway tunnel. The subway tunnel. Oh, dear God.
The subway scene was cool, and I liked the shaky cam element. Like, at the party scenes, I thought it was kind of annoying, but once the action got going, I thought it really just thrust you in the middle of the action.
And, you know, I hate to say it, but it actually did give me a headache. And it wasn't like me like, oh, this is stupid, I hate this movie. You know, it was like I got home and I was like, oh, I'm not feeling so good.
Just knocked you out. Did you sit really close to the front? I was like all the way in the back.
In our Cinemark, the way most Cinemarks are, you have that front row at the first spot where you can put your feet up. Yeah. That's my traditional spot.
Oh, gosh, that is pretty close.
So it could, you know, it wasn't like dead front, but still, it was pretty close.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I enjoyed it. You know, especially compared to what we had in 2007, you know, Hannibal Rising.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
This thing knocked it out of the park.
Oh, I love that. I mean, just looking back in my notes, I don't think we've had an event movie of this size open in January since the Star Wars Special Edition over 11 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. So. Where are people getting a 9 or 9.5 out of for a score for this movie, though? I have to say it.
They think it's the most original movie, and it's not. There's not an original bone in this movie's body. I mean, you know, let's name some: Aliens, Godzilla, The Blair Witch Project, The Mist.
So, are we ready for Cloverfield 2, Book of Shadows?
Oh, apparently, if they're going to do the sequel, I mean, they can't possibly do another Shaky Cam movie, can they?
I don't think so. I mean, it's like a movie that I love and hate at the same time, and it's really kind of frustrating in that aspect. I would never tell someone don't see this movie. It's what we're seeing, especially in the theater.
Yeah, it's a unique experience.
Yeah, and it's so unique. I mean, they really bring the terror to feel like it's at home. Now, like you were saying on your review, it's like, you know, there's 100 people in New York, and that was it. I didn't even pay attention to that. Now, granted, you lived in New York, so that would probably help a bit.
I just didn't buy them. I mean, there was that. I mean, yeah, it felt like it was underpopulated at times, and I swear they didn't look or feel like New Yorkers. And I've even been to, like, those upper-crust, like, fancy-schmancy parties up in the Village, and I swear, like, most of them don't look like metrosexual teens, and most of them have at least a trace of an accent. And most of these guys, they came across as what they are. Most of them are, you know, LA actors, and I think that's what they looked and felt like to me. They didn't feel like East Coasters at all.
But the scenes where they had the actual, like the terror shots, is what I'll call it. Even when you didn't see the monster directly, there was some truly scary and frightening stuff, yeah. And they made it feel realistic enough. The reason I had to bump it up to a 7, 7.5, probably 7.5 realistically, is because I went to the supermarket afterwards and I'm like, huh, I wonder what happened if it struck out here and I was stuck in the supermarket. Mm. And, you know, that's something that just came out of nowhere.
Then you would have The Mist.
Exactly. Well, yes. And I know what you meant by The Mist thing was when they're all in that one shop, right? At the very beginning? Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of things about it that reminded me of The Mist, but and I think The Mist is honestly a much better movie. But yeah, for what it is, I did like Cloverfield. But I
love the secondary monsters.
Yes. But like yourself, I will only defend it to a point, you know.
Yeah, the only way I can think of people giving it that high of a score is we haven't had this good of a monster movie in a long time, or even a slasher movie. I'd even make that argument.
Well, I'd go with The Host. I think The Host is actually better.
But I mean, American produced.
As far as American produced, no.
Oh yeah, it's not. If you want a really good, you know, fun monster movie, go watch The Host. It's a far better film.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, the last time we had a movie like this hit American theaters in a wide level was D-Wars, which is.
And that wasn't even American either, but
no. Although they build it that way.
Yeah, I think it was better than, you know, a lot of the, like the Freddy versus Jason, a bunch of the slasher crap that's come out. It was a better film overall.
Yes,
because it was actually genuinely scary in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. So I enjoyed it. Definitely check it out. Don't think that it's going to be the best movie ever.
No,
know what it kind of makes me think of? If they'd released Snakes on a Plane in January, they probably would have done better than it did.
That's an interesting point. And, you know, I think the film fans, the film community is just so thrilled that we have a movie of this magnitude, you know, this kind of hype and this kind of anticipation, at least in January. And the next week we've got Rambo, which is another movie that, you know, really peaked in its hype on the internet before anything else. So if anybody sees Rambo next weekend, it's going to be the people who came out for Cloverfield.
Yeah. And, you know, well, it's interesting because usually January is the dumping ground. We won't get into the reasons why, because there's plenty of speculation
about
that.
Too many reasons why.
But it also makes sense that someone would take the chance and, hey, let's put this out there because it's going to make nothing but goo gobs of money.
Yeah. And they were right. Yeah. And they did a very shrewd and very clever job of advertising this movie. And if timing is right. And they've already made their budget back 2 times over, to say the very least.
Yeah. I think it's like on track for like $42 million for this weekend or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, I have to say, I was very happy with the ending. I was very happy with the ending. Some people didn't like it. I'm like, how could it end any other way?
Yeah.
So I loved it. That's just me. Let's go ahead and talk about what DVDs are coming out this week as well.
New on DVD, we've got Torchwood Season 1, this spinoff of Doctor Who. Since you've brought this to my attention, I've looked it up, and I got to say, very, very cool. So freaking cool. In fact, I'm like, oh, hello, Torchwood.
Yes.
Tobin Bell is back, despite his being decapitated in Saw 4. Dwayne Johnson, unfortunately not in Southland Tales, which I liked, by the way, but in Disney's The Game Plan. But you know what? Made money for him, so good for you, Dwayne. Amanda Bynes in the movie Only Julia, My Wife Liked, Sydney White. And finally, Swamp Thing, the series.
So before we go on, okay, DVDs, okay, yippee. What did you think of Southland Tales? Oh, I totally forgot to get to that.
Gosh, where to begin? I mean, it's basically Richard Kelly's interpretation of a 21st century apocalypse, what it looks and feels like. And it takes elements of biblical, political, and pop culture elements and kind of skewers them around in a blender. as far as like a movie, it doesn't completely work. Parts of it are terrible. Parts of it are amazing. As far as like a big extravagant artsy movie that came out last year, I'd say it's so much better than Across the Universe. But that's the kind of movie it is.
Is that saying much though, really?
No, but yes, because I think parts of Across the Universe were brilliant and parts of it were terrible. But I think, and this is a similar kind of deal, but I think Southland Tales is honestly such a great movie at times that it's a shame that it's not up to the level of Donnie Darko, but it certainly reaches for it. The casting is weird because like Dwayne Johnson is really good. He has a very strange character and a weird performance. He's great. Justin Timberlake is terrific of all things. But then you've got like, who else? You've got like
Sarah Michelle Gellar.
She's okay in it. But then you've got like, it's so weird. The casting, John Lovitz, he plays this Clint Eastwood tough guy cop and he's awful because it's John Lovitz. What is he doing in this role? And then you've got Miranda Richardson dressed like the evil queen in Snow White. I mean, really weird casting in it. And the whole movie is like that. It's just like there's some stuff that really works well. There's some stuff that doesn't work. But the stuff that is brilliant and thrilling makes it so good that I do recommend people see it. And there's a lot of Donnie Darko-isms in it. A character gets his eyes shot out. There's a lot of biblical elements. In fact, the plot is very, very much in tune with the Book of Revelation. That's a theme throughout the entire film. There are amazing musical numbers. It's not for everybody. And I'll say this last thing, just to give you an idea of like how Richard Kelly really shoots for the moon in this movie. There's a line that The Rock says late in the film where he says, I'm a pimp and pimps don't commit suicide. That line pops up so many more times in the movie. You'd think that Kelly thought he came across the next Show Me the Money. They say that
really?
Line. They say the line so many times throughout the movie. I mean, I guess he thought it was like the best line in the movie, and it's not. It sounds as bad coming out of my mouth as it does The Rock. But anyway, it
sounds as bad as that trailer that we saw in front of Cloverfield, where it was like, you know, Havoc meets Fight Club, and oh, that looks painful too.
Yes, yes. So anyway, Southland, I think, is going to have a huge, huge following on DVD, and I can't wait to see the director's cut, which I think will make even more sense. Because really, this isn't a movie that makes a lot of sense in hindsight, but there's a lot to kind of pick apart. I liked it.
Okay, cool. And you know, I've also forgotten that you had someone tell you their theory about Cloverfield. This is like a spoiler, so
yeah,
ahead, what, like a couple minutes or so? Or?
Yeah, a couple minutes. This won't take very long. My buddy Jeff Sager saw Cloverfield the same day as I did, and he went back and told me, Barry, I've got a theory about this. And he said, how many monsters are in Cloverfield? And I said, well, that's easy. There's one big one, and then there's little critters that just jump off of it. He's like, no, there's three. I'm like, three? What are you talking about? He's like, think about it. The first one that you see from a long shot has that big old beak. Clearly, it looks like something out of Jurassic Park. But the one in the last scene, the one that, here's a big spoiler, the one that attacks HUD, the one you see in a very big close-up, it's got almost this round like feature, and it's got these pink little cheeks that puff out on the side. He clearly thinks these are very different monsters. I don't know.
That's true. Because the first one also had tentacles.
There you go. Yeah, exactly. So I only counted two different monsters, but he counted three.
That's an interesting theory. Okay.
I honestly hadn't thought of that until after he mentioned it. But the more I think about it, I think he's completely right.
Very cool. Okay.
So anyway, and spoilers.
Yeah. Let's go ahead and talk about some news because there's a lot. Well, there's not a lot of it, but there's some very interesting news.
Yes. Well, first of all, Christmas came early, even though it's only January. Christmas came very, very early for us over here. Justice League America is officially dead and buried. It has been shelved indefinitely by Warner Brothers, which basically means goodbye. Sorry, Adam Brody, but you're going to have to hang up your Superman tights and cape. It's done. It's over.
Thank goodness.
So no Thank more goodness. Justice League America. And I mean, they say they might jump on it once the strike is over, but really, no, it's over.
Okay. Hopefully, you know, yeah, I hope it stays dead in a way. Because I love the CG3, because you could have done so much, had it such a more grand and epic scale. Mm-hmm. I'll go ahead and give you a second Christmas present early. What was it? In the Name of the King, A Dungeon Siege Tale has apparently, in its wide release opening weekend, made a whopping $3 million. Mm. And since they have closed the tax loophole in Germany, allowing you to fund movies, apparently the he's never getting a big budget ever again.
Yay!
Yay! Na, 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 na. Yeah, pretty much that gets it, yeah. Yeah, I could not be happier about this. He said he wants to do a little bit more intimate, more smaller scale movies. You know, that's what he wants to do anyway. So,
which people will never see, because no one wants to see an intimate, small scale,
if we're lucky,
livable movie. So.
If we're lucky.
Good. Goodbye. Good
yes.
riddance.
Yes, and then we have the Funny Games trailer.
Yeah.
That got posted up at ain'titcool.com. Looks interesting.
Disturbing crap, I gotta say.
Was it Ethan who brought up Funny Games and Cache?
I believe so. Yeah, he was the one who first turned us on to Michael Haneke. Yeah,
I need to go ahead and Netflix that, because that looks really interesting.
Yeah, I definitely need to see the original before I see the remake. And I gotta say, interesting that it's a shot-by-shot remake. I worry that Haneke is going to do to his movie what the director of The Vanishing did to his film, George Sluzier. He did the American remake with Kiefer Sutherland, Sandra Bullock, and Jeff Bridges, and it basically watered down the film. Although, I got to say, from what the trailer looks, it doesn't look like he's going to water anything
down.
If anything, it might turn it up a few notches. So.
Yeah, apparently he said the reason why he's doing it this way is because the movie is apparently a critique on violence in American films and American society. And he's like, there's no way an American studio is ever going to want to make this movie. So he's like, well, since they did, well, it's just as good, so may as well just keep it the same.
It's a great cast. It looks like a particularly harrowing movie.
It does indeed.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm dying to see it, but I'm certainly interested.
I guess I'll do the Cloverfield thing.
Please.
There's talk that, depending on how much money it makes or whatever, that they might do a sequel. Matt Reeves is like, yeah, we're throwing out around ideas how we can do this. I really don't want Cloverfield 2 Book of Shadows. I honestly don't want to know where the creature or creatures came from.
Yeah.
It's one of those cases where it'd be castrating the creature.
What I think is interesting, though, is over the weekend, the reviews I've read of Cloverfield, a lot of critics have basically been spilling out exactly, literally, what the creature is and where he's from, because in the press notes and the press kits that the critics have got, apparently there's a whole rundown of what the creature of Cloverfield is, exactly, where it's from, everything, even the name of it. And a few of those items have been popping up in these reviews of the film. So...
And a lot of people were complaining that you didn't find out what the monster was. That wasn't the point of the movie. You know, it's funny. I kind of totally have a total double standard, because I had a problem with the fact that they didn't tell you what happened in Children of Men, yet I love the fact that they didn't do it in this movie. Mm-hmm. So, but I that's not the point of the movie. You don't need to know what the creature is. You need to know that it kicked our ass.
And I like the fact that it's something that, you know, minor spoiler, it's something that we really haven't seen before. And I like that aspect of it. Exactly. I like that surprise, and that when you're looking at it from a long shot, it's like, what is that? And what, you know, it's scarier that way.
Yes, yes. When it goes down that one time, and what happened afterwards, I was like, no, sorry, don't believe it.
Even that overhead helicopter shot we're looking down on, I mean, I found it very disturbing, because at times I'm like, is it that a big person? Is it a giant Labrador? What is that thing? And I love that aspect of it, because really, I mean, you know, Godzilla always looks like Godzilla. King Kong always looks like a giant monkey. This doesn't look like anything, really. And yeah. I love that aspect of it.
Exactly, exactly. Have you got anything else?
Sure. The new X-Files picture came out. It's an absolute mind-blowing spoiler. USA Today on January 17th showed us the first picture from the X-Files sequel, which opens up July 25th. And it's a shocker. You've got David Duchovny and Gillian Anderson looking at each other, walking down a hallway, wearing long overcoats, looking very, very paranoid. Who would have thought?
Who'd have thunk it?
Yes. Yeah. So, yeah. But it looks good. Gillian Anderson's got long, very long stringy hair, as opposed to her big bob that she had in the 90s. And Duchovny looks exactly the same. So, hey, we're in X-Files land. It looks good. Looks like the formula has not changed. So, right on.
Exactly. Do you want to bring up the final teaser that we saw?
I do. Of course, you got to talk about the Star Trek teaser.
Which is like, it's funny. There was nothing in that teaser at all. But I got goosebumps. As soon as you had Nimoy going, space, I'm like, oh.
Yeah, you got Nimoy doing the brief voiceover, and it's beautiful. The footage is beautiful. I don't know if it's ever going to be in the movie or if that's just for the
teaser. I doubt
it
will, but still. I mean, that still got me kind of excited.
Like, yeah, it was cool. It wasn't like as mind-blowing as I hoped. I mean, just one shot of Quinto as Spock would have been really nice. That would have been really cool. But I liked it from the teaser anyway. If it's any indication at all, when they finally showed the list of credits, they just listed it as Star Trek. So I'm curious if that's what they're going to call it.
I'm quite okay with that if they do that.
I think it's great if they're just going to call it Star Trek. Because let's face it, every other Star Trek movie has had every other title. You know, it's had all these monikers. But if it's just Star Trek, as in this is the beginning, folks, I'm all for that.
Unless it was, you know, Star Trek, The Quest for More Money.
That'd be
okay with that.
I'd be fine with that. In fact, call that Star... They could rename Star Trek 5 that.
So. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Ouch. Okay. Oh. All right. So have you got anything else, or should we take a quick break?
Oh, let's take a break.
Okay. We will be right back.
So, let's listen in as Ray hits on Sandra.
Excuse me, miss, but do you know karate? Because your body is kicking.
Now, let's listen to the same scene. Only this time, Ray is sporting a quality Geek Label t-shirt.
Yo, baby, I was wondering,
Damn.
Rejection.
What's up with that?
We can't really stop it.
Damn.
But we can outfit you in buttery smooth designs for geeks, gamers, and tech heads. They're custom t-shirts. They're not magic t-shirts.
Damn.
Another fine product from geeklabel.com.
All right, let's go ahead and move into our topic for the week. Our leading up, Dave's stalling so we can finish watching all the movies he needs to until next week.
That's right. But now we're going to have a little fun and get revenge on the movies that wasted so much of our time last year and basically made our lives miserable for 2 hours at a time.
Now, some of these we knew were going to be awful.
And some of these were genuine surprises.
Yes. So these are our worst movies of the year. Usually whenever you have someone like... When we were at the other show and we did our best and worst, it was like a 3-hour show because we did all this stuff at once.
Yeah.
If we spread it out, it's not quite as taxing. So.
Yes, and this way, like you say, we have more time to get caught up and stuff. I got to say, I'll just throw this out really quickly. I never did get the chance to see I Know Who Killed Me, which I'm told is like the worst movie of all time. I've not had that chance yet, but honestly, considering the movies I did see this year, I feel...
You've taken enough for the team.
Yeah, truly, truly.
Yes, and we'll try to have Josh's list by next week because I think he did see it.
Oh, I know he did. Yeah. He's been telling me all about how I got to see it. So,
fair enough. All right. Shall we just like go? How many of you got on your list?
You know, I've got a top 10 and I've got two that, you know, basically just kind of fell out of the top 10.
Okay. Well, if you want to start off, I've only got seven. So,
okay. Well,
start at the best of the worst.
Okay. All right. Well, I got to go. Speaking of D Wars, Dragon Wars, as far as bad movies go, it was the most unintentionally hilarious movie of last year. I've already talked about individual scenes that I just thought were just drop dead funny. Doesn't make it any better, but still, as far as bad movies go, if you have to see one terrible movie that came out last year, you could do a lot worse than Dragon Wars.
Oh, yeah, because we're going to get there.
Yes. And then at number 11, I've got Three, the film based on the Thomas Dekker Christian thriller, because Christians really need to be seeing their version of Seven, which is exactly what Three was. And Three even had a mind-blowing twist at the end, a mind-blowing twist, I got to say, that was so out of left field, so crazy, and so ridiculous, and such a freaking cheat. I couldn't believe it. It was the kind of thing that even M. Night Shyamalan would be like, no, I'm not
that's
going
too much.
There. No,
that's too much.
Yeah, I couldn't believe how bad 3 was. And I know the poster, it came out in January of last year, typical January film. And it, on the poster, it said from the producer of X-Men. So one of the people who produced X-Men is responsible for forwarding 3. But yeah, 3 was, you know, though not bad enough to end up on number 3 on my list, but 3 was genuinely bad.
Okay, why don't you give us number 10, and then I'll give one, and then you can do a couple more, and then we'll get caught up that way.
Absolutely. I now pronounce you Chuck and Larry. You know...
you took some serious bullets.
Yeah, I don't even know where to begin with this movie. I mean, I don't know what offended me more, Rob Schneider's ridiculous portrait of an Asian American, or the fact that this movie was basically one big cry. It was like it pretended to be, you know, a movie about gay pride, but it also was a movie that just bashes homosexuals every chance it gets, and then has this hypocritical ending that it's like... I hate this movie. I really, really hate it. I now pronounce you Chuck and Larry. And I like dumb Adam Sandler movies, but it made Billy Madison look good, and that takes some real suckery to do that.
It does. It does. All right. I actually didn't have a top 10, so I'm kind of doing this on the fly, but looking at my list, number 7 would have to be Shooter.
Mm.
That movie was awful.
So stupid. And
this is one of those that surprised me, because I'm like, Mark Wahlberg could definitely pull off an action hero movie, and this could be his big break. That ending in like the Arctic ice cap.
Right. Just all standing around the snow.
What the frick? I mean... It's not fair, but I still stand by the fact the Machete trailer is a better version of Shooter.
It is.
Absolutely.
And Shooter wasn't that exciting, and it's from the director of Training Day and Tears of the Sun, and wasn't even half as good as any of his movies. It was really, I agree, it was really bad.
Oh, that movie, it was very frustrating.
Yes.
So, all right, I'll let you do 9, 8, and 7, and then we'll be caught up.
Well, I've got a tie for number 9. I thought the two worst movies of the summer, even worse than I now pronounce you Chuck and Larry, because one was supposed to be amazing, and one could have been great. I know I'm alone here, but I hated Transformers and I hated Spider-Man 3.
Okay, Spider-Man 3 made it close to being on my list. I ended up taking it off at the end just because it isn't quite in the same class as I thought a lot of the rest of these movies are.
Spider-Man 3 for me was another Batman and Robin. It was a more is more is more sequel, and it made a mockery of these characters in the same way that Superman 3 made a mockery of its characters. What a come down for an awesome series. And Transformers, you know, I hate this movie for the same reason people love this movie. It is a big, dumb, loud, endless commercial. People found that very, very, very whimsical and sweet and cute about it. And honestly, I hated Transformers.
Fair enough. All right. So is that 9? And then
that's 9.
So let's go to 8 and 7. And
okay.
Go for it, because I'm already at number seven.
Okay, so. Luc Besson's Arthur and the Invisibles. What a step down for a great director. It looked like the American actors were basically flown in and basically had a lip sync over the already established animation. So like the lip movements almost looked like it never matched the character
really?
Movements at all. Oh. Never. And it was witless, beautiful at times, but a really genuinely bad children's movie.
Okay,
and then. What are we on? Number
seven.
Seven, sorry. Factory Girl. Girl, which I always love to point out. If you think there's no irony left in the world, Sienna Miller plays a woman who was very famous for her association with a famous man, Andy Warhol. Kind of ironic because Sienna Miller is, like the character in the movie, a talentless actress who is most well known for her association with Jude Law. So it's kind of ironic in that casting.
Wow.
Here's another element of ironic casting, Dave. Hayden Christensen in the movie is cast as Bob Dylan. Doesn't look, sound, or act like Bob Dylan, and he's terrible. On the other hand, Adam Sandler, not cast as Bob Dylan in Rain Over Me, looked, sounded, and acted so much like Bob Dylan. I wish they had cast Adam Sandler instead.
Okay, then. Ouch. Ouch. Yeah, we're getting kind of vicious now, aren't we?
Yeah, sorry.
Okay.
I have a gripe with Factory Girl, clearly, and Sienna Miller.
That's okay. You're going to get hate mail for Transformers.
Yes.
I'm going to get hate mail because my number six is Halloween. God, I hated this movie.
I don't think you're alone there. I think I'm more alone because, you know, Transformers made over $300 million. I don't know anybody who doesn't, even people who didn't like it, own it on DVD. But I don't think half the people who like Transformers like Halloween.
Halloween is the same reason I hated that movie, is the same reason it's number four on my list, which we'll get to. When you give a reason for why the monster became a monster, not even the background so much, but a reason why, you totally destroy any kind of mythos and terror behind the character, as far as I'm concerned. Yes, he's still a very scary person, but Zombie did that to make you feel, oh, poor Michael. And that's not what you're supposed to happen with a movie monster. Mm. You know, villain, slasher, creature, whatever. The only time it's ever worked was Frankenstein. That's the only time.
Frankenstein.
And then you got to the spot where they started doing like the shot-for-shot remake, and those scenes were kind of cool nods. But in spirit, I don't think it could have been further from the original film. Because you saw like half a boob and like two spots of blood. And like they had that passed in the first 10 seconds of Zombies movie.
Sure.
And maybe, you know, some people are going to say it's unfair because I'm judging it by the remake. Well, then don't make a remake.
Absolutely. No, you're right. I mean, you know, people say, well, it's got to stand on its own. Well, it can't. If it has the same title and the same characters as the original
and
movie.
Everyone said it's the same story.
Exactly. And at times it's the same scenes and same shots. Yeah, absolutely. Remake deserves that kind of assessment.
The one bit of thing that I'll give Zombie props for is that he's pretty much made sure that there's not going to be a sequel.
This is true. And I loved the ending. Did you like the ending at all or no?
I kind of liked the way that they ended it because, well, the ending itself, that final action, I liked. Getting to it drove me up the frickin' wall. Mm. It's like, are you actually going to shoot the gun now that you're holding it this time, or are you just going to waste my time some more? Because I'm done. So, yes. Let's go to your number six, sir.
Number six? Let's see. Oh, this is an easy one. I saw this one at Comic-Con, and you know what? Josh loves this movie with all his heart and soul.
Oh, no.
And you know, that's okay, Josh. You know, I've had crushes on girls who stabbed me in the back later on. Shoot 'em Up with Clive Owen, Monica Bellucci, and Paul Giamatti. Three wonderful, very talented actors who really, really need to fire their agents for appearing in such a terrible film from the first scene on. Some people could go along with the cartoonish nature of this over-the-top debacle of an action movie, but I could not. The movie insulted my intelligence. I thought it was an amazing exhibit of bad taste and just a dreadful film.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Ouch. I still have to watch it. Just because, like, you got too into the spectrum, and I feel like I need to be the referee or something.
Well, like I've said, in the movies, the only way I can defend the movie is to say that there is nothing else like this movie out there. It really isn't a category unto itself, which I don't think makes it a must-see, but really, you've never seen anything as awful to Shoot 'em Up.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, my number five is one that's on pretty much everybody's list. But, you know, the fact that it's number five is kind of surprising because I didn't think it'd rate that high. I figured it'd be closer to the top. Guilty. Yeah, freaking Ghost Rider.
Ghost Rider.
The most frustrating part is, again, people will say, well, you can't take it by the comic material. Then don't make the movie.
Mm-hmm.
This should have been balls out. This should have been a Blade-type R-rated movie. That's what it should have been. It should have been freaky. It should have been scary.
Should have been like The Crow. It should have.
Absolutely. It should have been a very disturbing and a very scary film, very dark. And this thing was a lightweight. I can't even describe how angry it made me. And I'm not even that big a fan of the character. But it was just done so horribly, so awfully. I mean, I wasn't sold by any of it except for Sam Elliott. And even then, when he ended, he rides off in the, you know, across the desert, which is a great scene, the one good scene outside of the killing of the iguana.
Yeah.
But he gets there, turns human, and says, "Well, that was the last time I could transform. See ya." What, huh? You know, it's just stuff like that. I just could not get behind this movie. Huge plot holes.
You know, it's funny. It actually fell off of my top 10 list just because I've forgotten about it. I've totally forgotten about that. I've forgotten about that in the other Sam Elliott movie, The Golden Compass. I completely forgot about those two stinkers. But yeah, I think the only thing I want to mention about Ghost Rider.
Should have made it number 7. Sorry.
That would have been perfect irony for the two people who got that joke. I love that the director is Mark Steven Johnson, whose first film ever was Simon Birch, a film I honestly really liked, a really sweet and very sensitive, sappy, but very good film. And then from there, he did Daredevil, and then he did Ghost Rider.
It's See, like, Daredevil at least has people who liked the movie a lot.
Daredevil, I thought, was a stupid movie, but compared to Ghost Rider, Daredevil is like Spider-Man 2. It's,
yeah.
You know, Daredevil is so superior to Ghost Rider in countless ways.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Ugh.
Sucky movie.
All right, moving on to number 4, a movie that should have been good but completely blew, Hannibal Rising.
Yes.
Once again, once you try to make the evil, diabolical, sinister villain, once you try to make them feel sympathetic, it just turns to pathetic.
Yeah.
The reason I was going to make, you know, Ghost Rider number 4, but Ghost Rider was a better movie than Hannibal Rising, I thought, because I actually remembered some of the character scenes that actually worked a little bit in Ghost Rider, whereas with Hannibal, it's just a big, ugh.
Yeah, Hannibal Rising, I don't even know what to say about that movie, because that, you know what's so devastating?
We had such hopes about it.
Because we got to interview the director, Peter yes. Weber, who was such a nice and intelligent man, and you know clearly put his heart and his soul into this movie.
And he did Girl with the Pearl Earring, which was
yes,
a good movie, too.
It's a great movie, and Hannibal Rising is not an ugly movie by any means. It's a beautiful film at times, but... yeah, that script was bad, and the ending was terrible, and it completely, like you said, I mean, it declawed, it castrated and decapitated Hannibal Lecter by making him a petulant kid.
Yeah, I think that Mr. Weber is going to be coming back. I hope he does, because yes. If this is the nail in the coffin, that'd be so sad, because he's a good director. I mean,
he has talent. The movie was not badly directed. I think the screenplay and some of the performances are the key to why that movie didn't work.
Exactly. Yeah, some people will say they should have just gotten Crispin Glover, but that's...
And some people think Crispin Glover was in the movie.
So. There you go. Yes, yes. All right, what's your number 4, sir?
Number 4? Well, actually, let's see. Actually, I'm on number 5.
Are you?
Yeah, okay. Sorry. It's my fault. I stretched this thing out too long. Number 5 was, for me, the remake of The Hitcher. Another January of last year.
That's when
year
I
movie.
Dodged, yeah.
Yeah, you know, Sean Bean is a very good actor, but... As amazed as I am to say this, he was no Rucker Hauer in that film. He was genuinely bad and genuinely bad movie. A really cool song, Animal by Nine Inch Nails, is featured in an action scene of the movie for no reason at all, completely ruins the potential of a really cool song. And the only distinction between The Hitcher the original and Hitcher the remake is in the original, there's a famous scene where a character is tied between two big monster trucks, which eventually tear the character apart. You don't see it in the original. In the remake, you see it in all its blood gushy CGI gore glory, and it does not do anything for the movie. The remake of The Hitcher, I thought, was just wretched.
Okay, yeah, that's kind of why I dodged it, because I didn't heard anything good about it, except for the people who were like, "Dude, that was the coolest movie ever." And those are the people who just
can't trust.
Good for
people.
You, but
good friends, but no.
Yeah, okay. Go ahead and give us your number 4 too, and then we'll all be right. Caught up completely.
Okay, well, number 4 is probably going to get me a lot of either hate mail or I guess whatever controversy I can elicit from a comment like this. I hated Atonement. I thought Atonement sucked. I thought it was a tedious crock of a movie. I didn't believe or feel anything about the relationship between Keira Knightley and James McAvoy. Good looking actors, talented actors in other movies. I thought they were just completely dead from the waist and neck down, bottom up, everything. They just nothing in this movie worked, I don't think. I thought the music was bad. I thought the movie went on forever. I think as far as filmmaking, the movie is beautiful to look at, but like its big famous long shot scene, it's a showily made film, but I don't think it's especially good film at all.
So it's this crappy, blatant Oscar bait pretty much?
It is like a parody of Oscar bait. It is such a cheeseball movie, and I think years from now people are gonna be like, why? Why? I think it's going to be like one of these movies like Chocolat or like The English Patient. Years from now, people are going to be like, why did America embrace this film? But seriously, I think Atonement sucks. I thought it was a terrible film. And I have no idea why everybody's bending over backwards to love this film.
Okay.
No idea.
Wow. Then
I don't get it at all.
I'll be staying away from this one. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And if this makes our top worst of list, don't take this as a dare.
No, please don't take this as a dare, especially for me, like the top five. Like, people just need to avoid my top five. I think Those movies are absolutely poisonous and a complete waste of time. In 2 hours, you can learn sign language. You can learn a foreign language. I can
alphabetize my shoelace collection by color.
You can knit a sweater. There's so many things you could do in 2 hours. Yeah.
And, okay, my top three are, like, the worst of the worst.
Here we go.
This one's going to get me some hate mail from some people. I'm guessing Eagle versus Shark was 2 hours of my life I will never get back.
And that's interesting, because I know a few people who even saw that. But the people I know who did see it, like yourself, really didn't think it was anything special. And everybody said it was, like, this great Napoleon Dynamite sequel.
It wanted to be. It wanted to be way too hard. And I just... someone kill these people. I wanted the Cloverfield monster to come in and just, like, eat them all. Oh, that movie. It was a very frustrating film because you could see they were trying to go for that same dorky kind of you like them kind of feel to it.
Yeah.
Didn't come close to pulling it off. I was just like, did these people drop out of special ed or what? Because, I mean, seriously, these people were not smart at all. And it was almost like making fun of people who aren't that so. I saw it almost as mocking people who aren't very socially adept.
That's not cool. I hate it when movies do that.
I just, oh.
That's how I felt about that Johnny Knoxville movie, The Ringer. I thought, this movie has such contempt for the handicapped and for people in the Special Olympics, such contempt for them, though it's pretending to be like a celebration of them.
Yeah, and, you know, I shouldn't say special ed because that is a bit inappropriate, but socially inept is definitely fair, and it's an ugly movie as far as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. You couldn't pay me enough to watch that movie again.
Wow.
So, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. What's your number three?
My number three is Alien versus Predator Requiem, or AVPR, because apparently people people don't have enough time to say Alien versus Predator Requiem. What can you say about a movie that makes Alien versus Predator look like a great film in comparison? What can you say about a movie directed by the brothers Strauss? No offense, but who are you guys? The brothers Strauss make Paul W.S. Anderson look like Martin Scorsese. What can you say about that? What can you say about a movie that has a scene where the alien impregnates a woman who is pregnant at the hospital as she's screaming, and there are other women around her pregnant screaming their lungs off, and the woman's babies miraculously turn into alien babies, and they're triplets, and they basically just splash out of her. And one of the most grotesque scenes I think I've ever seen in all of history. In all of cinema, rather. This movie was vile. It was stupid. I saw it with my buddy Zach, a good friend of mine. We were all up for a monster movie. We like good monster movies, good or bad. We were either howling at how awful the movie was and how bad the dialogue was. And if you think the characters in Cloverfield are one note, wait till you see AVPR. This movie was so bottom of the barrel. And even as far as like Alien versus Predator or Alien and Predator fans, I mean, this movie made Predator 2 look like Aliens. I mean, it was so wretched. And I guess like the one thing I think people would want to know, like, well, does it tie in the other movies well at all? There is one reference at the end where you find out who the other individual is in the Weyland-Yutani company, but it's not even a cool cameo or anything. It's just like a throwaway gag that the movie ends on. This movie was so wretched, and I couldn't believe how bad it was.
Wow, I'm starting to get a little depressed after talking about all these awful movies.
Yes, and we got two more to go.
Yes, we do. And my number two.
Number two, very properly.
It is a number two of a movie that would be Shrek the Turd. Because
wow, that's high up there for Shrek the Turd.
I hated, despised this movie.
Tell us why, Dave.
Because if you've seen the trailer, you've seen the movie.
It's not the worst. And I mean, that is the worst thing.
I mean, every funny, quote-unquote funny joke in the entire movie, in some form, shows up in the trailer. I was sitting through this movie with someone else, and I had to lean over and ask them, did these people not watch the trailer? Because people were loving this thing. They were laughing like crazy, and it was awful. It was wretched. I love Shrek 1. Shrek 2 wasn't, you know, okay, but it wasn't as bad.
Yeah.
But this was just awful. I may have giggled once, and that was about it.
That was during the teaser trailer for another movie before the film
started.
There you
go. Yes. Oh, it's...
There's nothing more painful than a bad children's movie, is there?
There are plenty of bad children's movies, but Shrek 1 was good.
Shrek 1, I thought it was a great movie.
I loved it. Shrek 2 was, you know, it's livable.
Yeah.
I can watch it once in a while. I mean, talk about a downward spiral. Good Lord. This thing, yeah.
So how many years now until Shrek the 4th? I think it's like 2010. We're coming out with
wow, look, I have to have till 2010 to ignore a movie. I will not. That movie made me want to never watch another DreamWorks animation picture ever again. Hmm. That's how much I hated this movie.
Wow.
So, yes.
That's a lot of hatred there.
There is, yes.
Going on with our downward spiral, number two for me was the Eddie Murphy film Norbit. The worst film Eddie Murphy has ever done, and yes, I've seen Best Defense. Norbit. What can you say about the movie Norbit? I actually taught a class about how racism used to be such a factor in early American films, from Birth of a Nation, how blackface, how just idiotic and offensive and disgusting stereotypes used to always be a factor in American movies. Then you have Norbit, a movie that not only does what Rob Schneider did in I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry, it also has ugly, nasty, hateful characters. They are hateful because of their race. They are hateful because of how fat or skinny they are. They are hateful for how good-looking they are. They are hateful for how nerdy they are. This is a movie that hates their characters. And there's nothing worse. I mean, you've got comedies, like even like something like Superbad or like the American Pie movies. Whatever you feel about those movies, the guys who wrote those films, they clearly love those characters. There's affection for those characters, as dumb as they sometimes are. I get the feeling that Eddie Murphy really just had such contempt for every character in this movie. That's how it felt. This was a vile film. This was, yes, I would say a racist film. And this is just a screechingly unfunny comedy.
Ouch.
Yes.
And we tried to tell you, this movie's going to suck.
And I couldn't wait to see it because I love Eddie Murphy in the past. I love Tandy Newton. My hopes were high. Eddie Murphy has done this kind of movie before. You know, The Nutty Professor, for how crude and sometimes completely silly and juvenile those movies were, especially the second one, The Nutty Professor movies are so much better. This was worse than Big Mama's House 2. And I like Big Mama's House 1, but Big Mama's House 2 is even better than Norbit. In fact, most movies on my list are better than Norbit.
Wow. One thing that I was just realizing, like outside of Shooter, I don't think either of us have seen most of the movies on the other's list. I guess for me, well, no, I guess we both saw Hannibal. Ghost Rider, Hannibal, Shooter, and Halloween.
Yeah, and I did not see Shrek the Third. And you know, even as I've been able to pick it up for free from the library, I'm like, you know, why? No. I could watch a Godard film. I could watch a Truffaut film. Why are you going to watch Shrek the Third?
You can watch Wallace and Gromit.
Yeah, I could watch Leonard Part 7. I mean, you know. Or is it Part 6? Part 6.
Part
6. Sorry,
yeah.
Sorry, excuse me.
They made a sequel. Uh-huh. Yeah. All right, let's get to the ugly.
Yes.
The worst of the worst. One of the movies that is the worst film I've ever, it very well could be the worst film I've ever seen or never will see. Mm. I don't know who thinks this was funny, why this thing made money, why they're doing a sequel called Meet the Spartans. Epic Movie is a cinematic toxic waste dump of film. I can't even begin to describe how bad this thing was. They did a Narnia ripoff. Where like they're gonna go, let's crawl into the wardrobe and oh shock, look, there's a bunch of crap that falls on top of a little girl. That's so funny. Followed by a completely naked woman who runs out, looks around, and prances off the screen.
Mm.
And my brain broke at that point.
Mm.
Unfortunately, Stephanie happened to walk out at that particular moment. She's like, "What the heck are you watching?" And I'm like, "I." She's like, "She was shaved." I'm like, "I did not even notice because my brain just shut down at that point." The X-Men jokes, I think I may have smiled at.
Mm.
And that movie was awful. Like the whole like Crispin Glover as a Willy Wonka thing.
And that's the one reason I wanted to see it, because he's in the movie. But no.
It is unfunny all throughout.
It's like, just a big poo joke, right? His whole scene?
Pretty much, yes. Yeah. Yes. I mean, and you know, you look at the trailer for Meet the Spartans, you got the Britney Spears thing. I'm like, that joke, isn't it like a 6-month-old joke? It's the same problem that I've always had with these movies. Except this one takes it to such a higher level. Like, this movie, I just, there's really no other way for me to put this. This film really does bring the height to filmmaking.
Yeah, you make an excellent point when you talk about these parody movies that have jokes that are you know, going to be old in 5 seconds. I mean, I think, you know, as much as I won't defend them to say that they're great, great movies, but I like Scary Movie 1 and I really like Scary Movie 3. I think the reason number 2 is literally number 2 is so terrible is because there's all these jokes in it that nobody's going to understand anymore. At one point in number 2, like, there's this talking bird that says, "You are the weakest link," you know, from the TV show. The weakest link. Who remembers the weakest link? There's a scene in the movie where there's a parody of a Nike commercial where, except unless you remember it or saw it on YouTube, no one's gonna remember that Nike commercial. And the whole movie is a parody of The Haunting, the Jean, you know, DuBont remake with Liam Neeson. Who remembers or cares about The Haunting?
The only reason I liked Scary Movie 4 was because you had Zucker on it.
Yes.
And Jim Abrams, who worked on it. So there were some portions that were actually genuinely funny.
Yeah.
They're just out there in very Zucker, Naked Gun, Airplane kind of humor. But that was it. Once they got to the, you know, hey, let's get to the up to the minute, I'm going to act like Tom Cruise jumping on Oprah's couch. Yeah, No.
But again, yeah, Scary Movie 4 versus Scary Movie 2, or in the case of, like, I haven't seen Epic Movie, but I saw Date Movie.
Date Movie is freaking What About Bob compared to this.
Wow. Because Date Movie was really bad.
Yes.
It was really bad.
It was, but there was like two spots where I laughed at that one. Like the stupid lollipop song, that was just awful, but I couldn't stop laughing at it when they're singing the song. You know, like all romantically, it's kind of like when the Ben Folds does the cover of the Dr. Dre song.
Yes, yeah.
In that way, it was kind of funny. Yeah, Epic Movie, no. There's no redeeming quality to this film at all whatsoever.
And it's amazing because it's basically the same filmmakers, and it's funny too. Like the trailer for Meet
Mr.
the Spartans.
Mr. Tumnus Cribs. Oh my gosh, kill me now.
Yeah, a joke on Cribs. Like, who the heck cares about Cribs? Cribs is going to be so gone. I mean, it's like one of these MTV shows no one watches. I mean, sorry to all you Cribs fans out there, but really, seriously, I mean, this is they're targeting stuff that nobody cares about. No one's going to remember, and certainly it's not a pop culture icon. I mean, to go again back to Scary Movie 3. Scary Movie 3 made fun of The Ring. It made fun of The Village. It made fun of movies that people have seen and movies that people remember and care about.
The Village ripoff was funny.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this crap like that, you know, at least that's a cultural milestone. Like, you know, Scary Movie 4 was all about War of the Worlds. I mean, and The Grudge 2. But yeah, I mean, here you've got a movie that's making fun of stuff that doesn't need to be made fun of in the first place, because it's not important.
No, not even a little bit.
No. Yeah. Epic, okay. Yeah. An epic disaster, unfortunately. Yeah,
yes. I would use other terms that just I can't quite say in good conscience, but I definitely think that they are. So go ahead and let's see what your biggest pile of the year was.
All right. Well, it has
to be worse than Norbit. I mean, this has got to be something.
Yeah. Well, I think this definitely fell upon what we mentioned on earlier. Just when you have expectations for a movie to be at least decent. You know, I didn't expect Perfect Stranger with Bruce Willis and Halle Berry. I didn't expect it to be a classic or even a magnificent movie. But I at least expected it to be better than Basic Instinct 2, which it's not. In fact, it couldn't be more inferior to Basic Instinct 2. Perfect Stranger is one of the most offensively bad movies I've ever seen in my life, just because how little it cares for its audience. I've never seen a movie assume so much that its audience was a bunch of complete and utter morons. There are times when the camera is literally ogling Halle Berry. It's amazing to see Halle Berry like doing a scene where she is acting, quote unquote acting, and the camera is literally panning down to, well, the reasons that we all love Halle Berry so much. And the other thing about the movie that I'll never forget is that it has Bruce Willis, you know, bless him, I love Bruce Willis, I think he's a great actor. Really, we all know this, the guy hasn't had hair since the 90s for whatever reason, whether he shaved it off or it all fell off, I don't know. He has, you know, over the years had a number of different wigs in movies, including, you know, some really great ones like in Sin City. In Perfect Stranger, he has a wig that is so, so awful. So many times I wish the movie was in 3D IMAX so I could just reach out and just peel it off his head. It was just such an amazingly awful, awful wig, such a terrible hairpiece. But back to the movie. The movie is a thriller. It has no tension at all. In fact, so much so that for the first hour of this film, I wondered what kind of film it was supposed to be, because it wasn't funny, it wasn't suspenseful, it wasn't scary, it was just barely interesting. Halfway through the movie, there is this big in-your-face product placement for Victoria's Secret. Completely in-your-face. Okay. I mean, Halle Berry is working for them.
Like the Mountain Dew machine in Cloverfield?
So much worse. So much worse. Because, what is this? All of a sudden, the movie literally turns into a Victoria's Secret commercial where she's giving out Victoria's Secret stuff. They're talking about Victoria's Secret. They're walking around Victoria's Secret. It's like, what is this, a movie? What is this? What's going on? And then you've got the twist that everybody talks about, will probably be talked about in film courses for years. It has a plot twist that is so hilariously bad and silly and ridiculous, and you can see it coming a mile away, but you can't believe just how awful it is, and that the filmmakers were actually under the impression that audiences would be shocked or amazed by the plot twist. And again, you know, let's go back to the actors. Halle Berry, I don't think, has given a really great performance since Monsters Ball, honestly. That was a long time ago.
Some people would say longer, you know, like me.
Not since the Flintstones. And then Bruce Willis, you know, who, I swear, it's like every other movie with him. He does a great movie, then he does a bad movie. He does a movie where he can win an Oscar. He does a movie where he can win a Golden Turkey. This is one of those performances where he just doesn't seem to be there. You could say he sleepwalks through the movie. I would say that maybe he realized halfway through what a mistake the film was, and he almost seems kind of embarrassed to be there. And even during the most dramatic scenes of the movie, it doesn't even seem to be phoning it in. It seems like he's got the audience on hold. And then you've got Giovanni Ribisi, who can be a good actor.
Yes, has been a good actor.
This is another one of his all-time worst performances. One of the worst performances of 2007, as far as I'm concerned. Perfect Stranger may not have been offensive the way Norbit was, or vile the way Alien vs. Predator was, or just stupid the way Atonement was and assumes that the audience would think it's glorious. Perfect Stranger is bad for the reason that all American movies can be so offensively bad, and in that they are strictly a product, and you get the sense that these, either the producers or the screenwriters or the directors or everybody involved, it's just under the impression that as long as the audience is entertained, it's okay. But this is a movie where it just seemed like everybody forgot to make the film entertaining. The movie isn't watchable. It is literally a worthless film.
Ouch. And so what did I give you for a present a few months back? I gave you Perfect Stranger on DVD.
Yay!
Yes, actually, I did. Knowing that he really wouldn't want it that bad, we were going to our local DVD supermarket, Entertain Mart.
Yes.
Those of you who know it know the crack house that it is. I gave it to him there so that he could immediately trade it in and get $7 in credit.
Yes, thank you. It was good to get rid of that film, get it out of my hands.
Certainly. Yeah, I think it was in your hands for about 5 seconds.
5 seconds. That's all it needed.
And that was you, mostly because of shock. You're like, what? And flipped it over, and you're like, yeah, no.
What are you doing, Dave?
Yeah, I got it for free, and I didn't want it. So I figured, hey, I'll give you the credit. So you get something back for the time that it took from you.
And that is the only case where that film has ever given anything to anyone worth anything.
Ouch.
Yes.
All right, so we have to hear what everyone else's worsts are. Post them in there. Email them to us, whatever you want. Let's go ahead and move on to some listener mail.
All right.
Because Dave's a slacker and missed Ethan's email last week, Ethan. So I feel absolutely awful. We actually got three of them from you, two from you.
All right.
So start with 2000 with the one for episode 21. It said, hey guys, just thought I'd throw out some 2008 movies I'm looking forward to that you didn't mention. And these are, I wanted to read this because he actually had some really good, some good choices in here. We got David Fincher's The Curious Case of Benjamin Button.
Yes.
Which I think we missed somehow.
Did we?
I think so.
Huh.
Yeah. Then we got Sam Mendes' Revolutionary Road with Kate and Leo, which, okay. But, hey, if it's good, it's good.
It's good.
Clint Eastwood's The Changeling, David Gordon Green's Snow Angels, the aforementioned earlier Michael Haneke's Funny Games, which is now on my list probably too. Molieres, I'm going to butcher that, so I do apologize, Blindness, M. Night Shyamalan's The Happening, and Ridley Scott's Body of Lies.
Good choice. Yeah.
And then he says, about the Space remake, that is pretty much the very definition of weak sauce. Ugh, hopefully the writer's strike has killed the development of it, and I am right there with you, sir.
One can hope.
So Shyamalan, I didn't even think about putting him on the list.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope The Happening is a real comeback after Lady in the Water, a movie that we both talked about and... we can kind of defend it, but I enjoyed it.
I'm proud to own it. I liked it a lot, but yes. Yeah, I'm curious to see what he does for another movie, especially since it's not Avatar: Last Airbender, yet.
Yes,
that's his next one, I guess. Mm-hmm. And then coming for 2007, we have some random awards from Ethan. Huh. Best scene with Josh Brolin shooting a dog. No Country for Old Men.
That was a great scene. It was.
Ouch. Best example of meh-ness and mediocrity in film, The Kingdom, Fracture, and Reign Over Me.
Wow. Huh.
Ouch.
Fracture, yes, because that's a movie that has not stayed with me at all, but Reign Over Me and The Kingdom? I thought those were pretty good.
Okay, well, no, that's why we have all of these, this stuff.
That's why we have this show.
Yes. Best movies I'd probably love if they'd come to my freaking town by now. I'm not there in control. And best line featuring a dairy product analogy. I drink your milkshake from There Will Be Blood.
Gosh, I hated that scene. It's funny that he mentions that. I talked to Marty about that. There Will Be Blood, I think, is a great movie, but that last scene in that movie just drives me crazy. I thought it was the one part of the movie where, there's all this humor that feels unnatural, and, the acting got really hammy. I hate the final scene of that movie. But I appreciate the milkshake gag. And, I hear the movie Control that he just mentioned. That's one of Marty's favorite films of the year, and I've heard that's an excellent film, documentary.
Very cool, very cool. And then he did send me something about Sunshine because, I made no bones about that. I hated the last act. Mm-hmm. Says, I know there's been a lot of debate about the third act of Sunshine on the internet, but to me it made perfect sense thematically. This is going to be a mild spoiler, so jump ahead about 30 seconds in the show for the wrap up and whatever. To me the film set up the sun as a representation of God, and Pinbaker was a representation of religious fundamentalism. In the end, the film has a message that we as humans choose our own destiny and can save ourselves. We can't wait on miracles. At least that's how I saw it.
Interesting.
It's very interesting. I may have to see it again to look at that.
I may have to see it for the first time. Like many people, I didn't get the chance to see it in the theater.
Yes, yes. Well, I didn't totally give away the ending, but yeah, it's that could be interesting. Yeah, that could get into theological debates that we won't do on this show. So, but yeah, I can definitely. I guess I could roll with that. So yeah, very good insight, sir.
Cool.
And I guess that's about it for this week, isn't it?
Well, we got to talk about next week in theaters. And
oh, goodness, how did I miss that? Okay, let's go to that. Yes, let's do this week's movies.
Hey, we jump to our mail. We got to
yes
take care of the mail. Next week in theaters, How She Move. Actually, it's How She Move or How She... It's just grammatically...
We're too white. We're not going to get it right.
Yeah, it's How She Move because I'm white. Diane Lane and the unwatchable, untraceable torture porn
so
returns.
Bad.
Oh, awful, awful. Speaking of awful, the geniuses behind Epic Movie give us Meet the Spartans. The less said about that, the better.
So essentially, after a pretty good showing last week with Cloverfield, we're back to the normal January crap.
Oh, but there is one. Let me give you a scene.
Oh, no.
Kulin is like breathing. You got Stallone in Rambo.
Okay.
Rambo. And then finally, in limited release, U2 3D IMAX. So you get to see Bono and The Edge apparently just sit on your lap and serenade to you. It's a magical time at the theater. So.
It's funny. You know, I got a bunch of I work a second job at Game Crazy, and all the guys are like, we need to all get together and go see Rambo like on Saturday. I'm like, that could be a good time. Go see with a bunch of guys, death, destruction, mayhem.
I'm a little worried, though, because, I mean, first of all, I like that it's a hard R because, you know, this movie does not need to be PG-13. It needs to be hard R, but apparently it's rated R for sexual assaults. That's one of the reasons.
Oh.
So does that mean how many rape scenes are we going to have to sit through?
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah,
so
let's hope not.
That makes me a little weary because Julia is a big Rambo fan. So I wanted to take her to this opening night. So I'm kind of curious now if it's... Yeah, if this is just going to be
pretty much. If it's a January movie, I'm not spending anything more than matinee prices.
Though I'm rooting for Stallone. I want him to do to John Rambo what he did to Rocky Balboa. I really want this to be a terrific, terrific, you know, swan song for this character. And I would love it if Rambo died at the end of this movie. I would love that. But
a good heroic death.
I think even if the reviews are bad, I think it's definitely going to open, but I would love for this movie to have the legacy that Rocky Balboa does. I really, really am rooting for this movie, but I don't know. We'll see.
Okay, fair enough. All right, so let's go ahead and hit the DVDs for next week.
DVD release, the documentary film King of Kong, A Fistful of Quarters. It's supposed to be a terrific movie about two guys who spend their whole life basically challenging each other to a game of Donkey Kong.
Yeah, pretty much.
That is awesome. Groundhog Day, the 15th anniversary edition. It's been 15 years since Groundhog Day. Wow.
Yep.
And so many movies have ripped it off since.
Yes.
Like Atonement. And then you've got the Nicole Kidman, Daniel Craig flop, unfortunately. Not a terrible movie, but not a classic, unfortunately, The Invasion. Monty Python's Life of Brian, The Immaculate Edition.
Such an evil title.
Who says
so
we don't talk about religious films on this show? And then, speaking of religious experience, makes you feel like you're in hell, Daddy Day Camp, starring Cuba Gooding Jr., unfortunately directed by Fred Savage. Oh,
So did you see that?
No.
Okay, I was kind of surprised that didn't show up on your top. On
no,
your worst
I,
10.
I just didn't see it, no.
Okay, yeah. No. Usually we try to dodge these, but sometimes, you know, you just walk into it.
Sometimes, out of curiosity, I'd see that just because I like Fred Savage, but, you know. I hope it paid for his new house. I really do. And then finally, in a movie that really didn't get they really made it seem like it was going to be an Oscar picture, but it just kind of fell off the radar. Michael Douglas and Evan Rachel Wood in King of California. I heard that was really good, but
I don't even know if it got a theatrical release. Really, did it?
It did, but I don't think. It seemed like it lasted like 2 weeks tops. It just
okay.
It's just one of those many, many art movies that just kind of slipped into the cracks and vanished.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, if you'd care to email either of us about, you know, movies you hate, love, whichever. Next week, it is our top 10. Whatever I miss, such as life. But
this
I'm
week
I'm
was all
hard.
About hate. Next week is all about
the
love.
Yes. It's
nothing but a love fest over
yes.
here.
Yes. I can tell you what number one's going to be already. The Fountain.
That's right. It's going to be number one until, what'd you say, till 2009?
Something like that, yeah.
That's right. We love us some Aronofsky over here.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Thank you for bringing that up.
You know, I
glad you remembered.
It was a good joke, and I still love and adore the movie. It's one of my favorites.
It actually still holds up.
Oh, yeah, I still love that movie.
That's
absolutely.
Good, that's good.
Yes, yes. It wasn't done like tongue-in-cheek, oh, I'm mocking this movie like I would with like Little Miss Sunshine now. Like, if I could take one movie off my list from last year, it'd be Little Miss Sunshine.
Okay.
So, yes, next week, the big top 10, we'll probably have to we'll try to have Josh's list as well. Maybe even Marty's. We'll
That'd be great. Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure Marty will give us a list.
So if you'd care to email us, you can catch any of us, Josh, Dave, or Barry at screengeeks.com. You can also email podcast@screengeeks.com. Our voicemail is going down for a week or so just for some maintenance stuff. So it will be back. Don't worry. But until next week, when we do the big send off for 2007, this is Dave.
And I'm a pimp, and pimps don't commit suicide.